13 years ago in my previous marriage, and these two boys have brought me much joy. TJ, you may have seen, he was on Australia's Got Talent 2 years ago. He was the Ethiopian drummer boy. And he is going to go on stage. We can just tell that. He's a big personality with lots of talent. We're just trying to settle him and keep him at school at the moment. He's nearly 17 and will be in year 12 next year. His younger brother, Ababau, is 15 and loves to play football. So they've kind of both got their different talents, and Ababau's also really good at long distance running. It's those Ethiopian legs. Some of you have met my husband before, Jonathan Krause. He's worked for ALWS for a number of years. And Jonathan and I are in a second marriage. And it's a lovely story. I get to tell my version because I'm here. His version says, because we were at high school together at Luther College in Melbourne, and we were school captains together in year 12. He says, I broke his heart 57 times. I said, you didn't chase me hard enough. And so then it took, 30 years for us to reconnect. But we're incredibly happy, and he is a wonderful dad to my two boys. So a little bit about Australian Lutheran World Service. It's a long name, and we shorten it to ALWS, which you can see on my T-shirt. And if you think of the Lutheran Church, it's a bit like a giant octopus with many arms or legs. So we have Lutheran schools, and that's what I'm doing in the next couple of days, going to the Lutheran College in Rockingham to work. There's Lutheran congregations, like here at Duncraig. We have Lutheran Community Care, which is a part of our church that cares for people in local communities. And we have things like youth camps, groups of people like yourselves meeting. We also have Mission International, which is specifically to take the Word of God to other places. And then we come in as the aid agency of the Lutheran Church of Australia. And as many of you have probably experienced, when we are out in the field and talking to the people that the Lutheran Church supports in countries like Cambodia or Nepal, Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, our African countries, Burundi and South Sudan, the refugee camps in Kakuma and Somalia. And wherever we go, people will say, the Lutherans, they are kind and they are generous. And I'm here to vouch for that, because as an aid agency, we could not do our work without the generous hearts of the Lutheran Church of Australia and people who support it. They're an amazing bunch of people. And I'm sure that those of you who come here each, is it month or fortnight, for the craft group, you've experienced that kindness as well. So why do we do the work we do? Really because we know how much God loves us, and we want to share that love. And also, in his word, there are over 2,000 times that it's mentioned about caring for the poor, for the widows, the orphans. And we think if something's important to God, then we want to be a part of that work too. And that every person is made in the image of God and deserves that respect and dignity and care, no matter what colour their skin, no matter what their religion is, or if they are a group who are rejected even by their own people. They deserve the basic human rights and needs to be met. And you don't have to watch the news for very long to know that there is a lot of need in our world. And again, I'm reminded by the generosity of Australian people as you are responding to the victims and people suffering in the droughts here in Australia. But for us, because our focus is overseas, we see so many cases of simple things like people having to drink this kind of water every day. Not only having to drink that kind of water, but usually having to walk up to 3 hours to collect it, then carry it back to where they live before they can use it. Sometimes we can feel overwhelmed by the needs that we see in the world. And yet again, the Bible reminds us that if we just start with one small thing, we will make a difference. Sometimes we get inundated with mail and, you know, give here, give there. And sometimes it's hard to choose, what shall I do? I want to respond because you have a compassionate heart. And sometimes we think, well, it's not really practical for us to all get on an aeroplane and fly over and help. So what is maybe an effective way to help? And at ALWS, what we see works best is when people here can donate money that can be used by the people over in the field who are in need. Because sadly, even our good intentions, when we want to give our secondhand goods or things, quite often they end up sitting in shipping containers that never get opened and never get to the people that you are hoping to help. And that's one of the sad things we see as an aid organisation. So unless you know that the shipping container will be opened and met at the other end, it's often not, the work's not getting there and doing what you'd like it to do. Sometimes if we send goods over, we're actually taking away from the local market and the local people because they need to have trades. They need to use their goods from the markets, and so it can be destructive rather than helpful. As an aid agency, ALWS work really hard to keep our overheads low, and so that's why we have a big tick from the Government of Australia, and we're part of a group called ACFID, so that every dollar that's donated, you know that 87.4% of it actually gets to the people and does the work that you want it to do. So the main work that we do is obviously we respond to disasters when they happen, but a core part of our work is called sustainable development, and that will be explained as I go on, as well as doing a lot of work with refugees. So, for example, when the Nepal earthquake happened and so many people lost their lives, ALWS had workers on the ground with our partners, LWF, and within 5 hours we were taking supplies and reaching out to people in need. And so in that instance, it's about, first of all, just helping to provide some food, some clean water, some sanitation, just to help people get through those first couple of weeks. But the real work starts after that. After the news is finished and they've kind of moved on to the next thing, is when the work really needs to happen to help people recover from such a disaster. When you have so little and you lose your home, your way of growing food, your livelihood, you're left with nothing. And so that's where we come in. And even 12 months after that earthquake, I went to visit Nepal, and you're still finding villages and homes in this sort of condition because people just didn't have the money to rebuild. So then you come in supporting someone like ALWS, and the first thing was supplying those green water tanks so that people could have access to some fresh water. Then it was helping to clear up the rubble. Then the help that ALWS provided was providing 17 sheets of good old corrugated iron. As Australians, we're very familiar with that, and helping people to create temporary help houses so that some of them would look like this. So now families were living, you know, with maybe 10 or 12 people in a small building like this. We also did a lot of work training the women because the dads didn't have anything. They'd lost their livelihood, so they were off going to India to try and work some slave factory work to send a little bit of money back. So it was the women that were taught some of the carpentry skills to help rebuild a structure their family could live in, or making mud bricks so that, again, and you can see different styles. Part of our work then is also helping communities be prepared for disasters. So we help them get ready. So, for example, in a flood-prone area, it's putting up a map to show where the water's likely to go so that people can avoid those places. Building a community room so that people, and it's up on a plinth so the flood waters don't get in. And it's a place, that safe place that people can go. And inside, providing that round tin, is a rice bank so that each family contributes, might be just a kilogram of rice throughout the year, and it's kept in safety there so that if they do have a flood, there's some food to eat when they need it. And do some first aid training and giving people the system of what to do. Another simple thing is the flood warning system. Very simple. When the river starts rising and it gets to that orange mark, the message is sent to the community and to the community downstream to say you need to get ready to put your plan into action. If it reaches the red, then they know they have to put their plan into action. It might be going to the safety room, letting their animals go free because the animals will naturally find the highest ground. And we hear people tell stories and say thank you so much to the people in Australia who've helped us with this training, because now we've saved lives. One lady said, each time a flood came, I used to get stuck in a tree, sometimes for 3 days. But now I have a plan and I know the safe place to go and I know where the rest of my family are. Thank you to the people in Australia. Even simple things like putting a shelf so that all their pots and pans don't get washed away. And you might ask, well, why do these people build where the water floods? The answer is because they belong to the lowest of the low class in their country, the untouchables. And so they are not allowed to own land. So the only place that they can build is in that little bit of public space that's on the edge of a river. Hence, they're often losing their houses or experiencing floods. So again, we do a lot of work, and our work begins by listening. Going into a community and listening to the people and what their needs are. Listening to who are the most vulnerable. And then people making a plan. And if you can't read or write, then you draw your plan of the things that you know will help your family meet their basic needs. Things like having clean water, having some income, and being able to be healthy. It's putting things in like fresh water into a community. We had a wonderful young schoolgirl I'd presented to a school in South Australia, and she got passionate about helping. So she made, and it reminds me of you because of that craft group, she made little packs of hair accessories, scrunchies, clips with bows, etc., and sold them for $20 each. And she raised $600 and put a well in a village in Cambodia. And I just think that's fabulous when you see that compassion of young people come to life, and her ability to say, well, I can do something, I can make a difference. When we do something like a well, it's about making it so that it's easy for people to use, so not mechanised, but usually a hand pump or a foot pump, so that you don't have to rely on diesel and other mechanics to fix it. It's training people about sanitation, so it's kind of a holistic approach. It's putting things as simple as a culvert and a little bit of bridge in a community that can actually save lives. In this village, when the rains came, that would become a torrent of flowing water and too dangerous to cross. And we heard stories from the village who said, it was so hard because we had someone who was sick and we have to carry them 6 or 15 kilometres to get medical help. When we get to the raging river, we have to turn back. And so sometimes instead of getting help, we end up having a funeral. Mothers wanting to give birth, children getting to school each day, people being able to sell the produce that they grow is all changed when people here in Australia support a project like a bridge and a culvert. And of course, we're passionate about education because we know that what a child learns cannot be taken away from them. You may not have much food to eat. You may not even have both parents. You may not have shoes or many clothes, but what you learn stays with you and it gives you an opportunity for a better future because you can have some sort of livelihood or job in the future. At ALWS, we are passionate about empowering people. So our projects are about people discovering their potential, their gifts, and being given opportunities to use them. So we use local people to teach local people to do things for themselves. And I think it's a bit like that Chinese proverb that talks about fishing. And my boys would love to fish down at the beach. And the proverb says, you can give a man a fish and that will feed him for a day or two. But if you teach him how to fish, provide him with fishing rods, lines, hooks, sinkers, show him where to fish, give him a few different ideas of how to put different rigs together, then you can teach him to feed his family for a lifetime. And that's really the core of our sustainable development, providing opportunities and training for people so that they can become independent themselves. And I'd like to share with you a video clip of Kamala and how this is at work. And Kamala lives in Nepal.
How do you thrive when you can barely survive? Let's go to Nepal and meet Bawana.
My mother used to work every day in a brick factory. It was hard work. Dusty work. She had to leave us every morning very early and often did not get home until very late. My mother would work very hard to try and feed us, but so many days we had no food. We did not see her very much. She was always tired and worried. You see, my father was very sick. We did not have enough money to buy the medicine he needed. If we did have enough money, my brother would have to walk 6 kilometres to get it. He must stay home from school to look after my father. I was too young. My mother is always worrying how we will survive.
Let's see what happens when someone like you helps a family like Bawana's survive and then thrive. You soon see the hard work you do here in Australia is matched by the hard work of families in Nepal. For Rowana's family, your help is learning how to grow vegetables.
My mother joined the learning. Now she works in the field raising vegetables, and it is much better because she is here and we can see her. I help her after school. When the plants are very young, I help to transfer them from the little buckets to the ground and water them. I feel good doing this work.
Vegetables are only the start of your help. The family are raising goats and pigs, and are even using the pig poo to make biogas for cooking and lights. And what does all your help mean for the family? They thrive.
My mother is happy now. She can spend time with us, and with her savings from the markets, we now have food every day. And we can buy medicine for my father. My brother and I can go to school every day. And my mother now knows how important that is. I would like to be an eye doctor.
This is how you help a family survive, then thrive. Thank you.
And I apologise, the images are a little out of sync with the story that was happening, but at least you could hear the story and how someone from here in Australia, by providing through Gifts of Grace, which is a little booklet that we put out each year, and it gives opportunities. So someone from Australia, through giving $27 to provide Kamala with seeds and training, means that she became part of a group in her community that learnt about fertilising, how to compost, how to plant the seeds, to care for them, and even some basic literacy and numeracy. All those things she learnt. And in fact, her story continues in that through that process, she gained confidence in herself. And she actually joined a local group that would speak to the local government and put forward ideas of what they needed in their community. So it all began with someone's generosity here in Australia, changing her life and in the community, and now she's able to send her children to school and afford medicine for her husband. So small things from our side can make a huge impact in the lives of people who are struggling before that intervention. And over again, we hear stories of people like Kamala, women who never learnt to read or write, but given the opportunity to join an agricultural cooperative group, to learn how to care for buffalo or pigs, it changes their lives and they are able to meet the basic needs of their families, gives them hope for the future. And you just see the confidence in them grow, and as they discover skills. We have women who, again, could not read or write, and yet through this process, one of them became treasurer of the group because she learnt that she actually really loved numbers and was good with them. And it's just such a joy when you see this kind of change happening in people's lives. So we do work with whole families, but I guess because a lot of the women don't have that opportunity to go to school from previous generations, we run a lot of women's groups with basic literacy and numeracy involved as well. And just seeing them grow is a wonderful thing to experience. As I said, even learning skills like carpentry and brick making, or learning how to sew, all of these things make a huge difference. Sometimes a project might be this simple shelter shed, and we might look and go, well, that doesn't look that exciting. And yet, that in itself has changed the lives for many local families, because before, the hard work, the women were, you know, producing some vegetables to sell at the markets, but when they took it to the local markets, they were being ripped off by the middlemen who weren't giving them a fair price for their produce. And so through ALWS, we built this shelter, and now the women can come, and they come by bike, or some of them will walk for 2 hours up incredibly steep hills carrying up to 30 kilograms of produce But they are so thankful. They say, thank you to the Lutherans, because this means now we get a fair price and all our hard work that we put in to grow these vegetables, we now can take some money home and use for our families. And you see their joy here as they are trading and selling, and other people come from the village to their market to purchase the things that they have put in the effort to grow. And then, of course, it has that double spin-off that as they grow a greater variety of vegetables, it means better health and nutrition for their children. And that has follow-on positives, because then the children are more able to go to school each day, and it also helps them keep fighting against diseases. So all these things make a huge difference, and it just sometimes begins with seeds and a hoe in a bucket that someone has bought from here in Australia. We also do a lot of work with vulnerable groups, particularly people with disability, because so many of these stories that I hear are from young children or babies that have been, maybe had an accident or injured or had something not right when they were young, but the family is too poor to get medical help. Like Purusha, his parents noticed that his eyes didn't seem to be quite right when he was a young child, but they didn't have enough money to go and get medical help. The father worked hard and saved and saved. When he finally took his son to the doctor, he was 7 years old, and by that time the doctor said, "I'm sorry, the damage is permanent. Your son will be blind for the rest of his life." And if that's not hard enough, what often happens in these countries is that if you have a disability, even your own family at times consider you worthless. They ignore you because you're just an extra mouth to feed and you cannot do anything to contribute to the income of the family. Purusha walked around with his head down for many years in his life, feeling unworthy and ashamed. Then, through help from people through ALWS, he was given an opportunity to learn Braille in school, and he was so passionate about learning and education that he kept on going, and he was 27 years old when he finished, I think, year 10 at secondary school. Through that support from ALWS, he was also trained in how to run a small workshop for people with a disability. He's been able to marry, and he was given a couple of simple aids like the stick so that he can get from his home to the workshop about 3 kilometres away. They now make candles and incense, which they sell at local markets, and there's a whole variety. He now goes out into communities nearby and seeks out anyone with a disability and says, "There's hope for you. You don't have to feel worthless and useless. Come and join this workshop, or I'll help you set up another one." From a young boy who felt completely worthless, he's now holding his head up high and someone who is doing wonderful work in his own community. He's also started a little kiosk to help his family have extra income, all because people here were able to give and support him in this project, giving hope for his children for the future. Sometimes being stuck in poverty can feel like you're stuck in a round hole with no way to get out. And that's where working through an agency like us is like bringing a ladder and providing opportunities for people to get out of that situation and giving hope for the future for these families and their children. Just recently, I have been to Burundi. And you might ask, well, where on earth is Burundi? And that's okay, because not many people know where it is. It's a very small country in Central Africa. And when we go out to schools, I have my famous toilet roll that I've written the numbers 1 to 187 on each piece. And the reason I've done that is because it's called the Human Development Index, which is a scale that's used to measure 187 countries and how much access they have to health and education and how the average wage for each country, how it, you know, how rich they are. Anyone want to have a guess between the numbers 1 and 187 where you think Australia might lie? And just call out a number. No, we're near the top, so we're near number one. So you're very close. We're actually number two. So even countries like America and Canada only come in at number 10. Number one is Finland. And Burundi comes in at 184. So when you visit a country like that, you are confronted with very real life poverty. And I say, well, you know, maybe what does that look like? Well, it looks like this is your home. It's just made of mud and you have a straw roof and this is where you've lived all your life. You only have one set of clothes and often you don't have enough food to eat each day. The food you get to eat is what you grow, and if it doesn't grow, then you don't have anything to eat. This is Prime, and he was orphaned himself as a young child, and he said, I've always been in bad health, struggling with sickness, and always been poor. I had a wife and five children, two boys and three girls, but they all died because we did not have enough food to eat and they got sick. Later, I married another woman and was married to her for 9 years. But then, because again, we still did not have enough food, she had to go to the refugee camp in Tanzania. We had two children. She took one son with her and left me with this son. He has a mental illness. Sometimes he can help me in the field, but life is very hard. Last month, my son was sick and I needed to take him to the hospital. I had to walk him there. I did not have enough money to pay for help, so I had to borrow from my neighbours. Now I have to work like a slave just to pay back my debt. I even have to work for my neighbours just to get a little bit of oil and salt to add to my rice or beans. This is where you start to become part of his story. He is in a program that we're just starting to work with, and he's been given a hoe, a bucket, and some drought-resistant cassava seeds. And now his journey of change will begin. He is so thankful for these simple things that have been given and the training that he's receiving. And I felt incredibly humbled when he is going, thank you so much that you come to listen to my story and that you came to visit and sit with me. It put a lot of my problems in very real perspective. Or you have someone like this mother here who, because of the war and conflict in Burundi, when she was 13 years old, the soldiers came to her school. They started shooting and she ran for her life. Then her family could no longer stay in their home because it was not safe. So they lived in the bushes for 2 years. When it did settle down, they came back to their family home, but she said, I was too traumatised to go back to school because I'm always worried, what if the soldiers come again? So I began working in the fields. I got married at a young age and had several children. But then again, conflict came to our community and we had to flee our home. My husband was taken by the rebels. I did not know where he was or what happened. Thankfully, he did come home again. But then the rebels would just come and steal our livestock and our food, the little food that we had. So again, we had to live in the bushes. Many of our friends died in this time. Then in 2015, my husband died. And now I am left alone with the five children. How do I feed them? What do I do? I am so thankful for your help that has begun in my village. My children were going to school, but I do not have enough money to pay for their uniforms or materials, So now only one child can go. You are helping by simply providing me the use of a goat that will help fertilize the seeds that you have provided with the hoe and the bucket. And I'm also looking forward to the new roof that you are helping. I am making the bricks for the house. I will make 2,500 bricks, and my son will help put them together. And then we are excited that we will be able to sleep dry at night. Thank you that you have not forgotten us and are helping. And over we hear stories of incredible poverty, but how your help can make a difference. With Francine here, again, also impacted by the conflict and had to go to the refugee camp. When she returned, she'd lost three children in the camp. But when she returned, she started her family again. With three children, life was difficult and challenging. But then on top of all that, one day she went to get provisions from the market. And when she came home, she found her eldest son, who is now 20, but at the time was 9, with burns on his leg. And her other two children had been burnt to death because the simple grass hut had caught on fire from the fire where they were cooking. This young man has to live with the fact that he couldn't save his brother and sister. He then had to leave school because he needed to help the family income. But your help in working with someone like Francine has now turned her life around. She said, I felt like taking my own life after that tragedy in my family. But through going to a local church and meeting with other women, I said I can keep going. Then I joined a group supported by ALWS to learn how to grow pineapples. This has changed my life. Now I have an income and I can feed my family and have a home that has a roof. You have helped heal the hurts and give me hope for my youngest son. And again, where we've been working in these villages, we see the change in people's lives. Where together, what we can provide, the training and simple things like growing bananas, helps turn lives around. That these women, and the one third from the left, as part of the work, it's basic literacy and numeracy work as well in the training. She said, when you came to my village, I could not even hold a pen and know how to write. But now I know how to write my name. And this is good, because now when I go to the medical centre, I can sign my name and get some free medicine for my children. Before, I could not do this. This is the kind of change you make in people's lives. And you bring great joy. And lastly, I'll just finish up with the work that we do with refugees. ALWS actually began because of the camp at Bonegilla, just out of Albury, where a local pastor saw the need and wanted to help people. Today, there are over 65 million displaced people and refugees in our world, so more than after the Second World War. And the confronting fact is that more than half of them are under the age of 18. So when your home has been devastated by war and you wonder who will accept and take care of you, you often end up in a refugee camp that's in the middle of a desert in land that no one else wants. And maybe from your 2 or 3 bedroom brick home and your life as a shopkeeper, electrician, lawyer, teacher, this now becomes your home. The average time that people spend in a refugee camp today is 17 years. So you realise that any hope and help you can give to people living in a refugee camp is an incredibly precious gift. We see so many families have to make incredible journeys just to even find the safety of a refugee camp. But this is where you come into their story. As the Lutheran team, you welcome them into the camp, take down details to try and reunite families, and then offer them practical things like food rations, blankets, some containers, and working in partnership with UNHCR, shelter. I often say to the students, many of us like camping, but when your house becomes in with maybe thousands and thousands and thousands of tents, it becomes a different sort of experience. We do a lot of work to support young children who've seen trauma, things that no child should ever see. So many children arrive traumatised because they've seen parents killed or other people in the community killed, or they've had to flee for their lives, hoping that the rebels don't catch them. It's about working with young people to give them hope for the future and providing them with education. We also support foster carers, parents who've already lost often children of their own in the journey, but open their hearts to take care of those who arrive without parents. So giving them a few extra dollars to do this helps. When you're in a refugee camp, there isn't much that you can do. You're not allowed to own land. So even teaching things like making bricks, barbers, how to bake, running a small shop, sewing lessons, so that you can take something in the camp that can be used to provide extra income, or a skill that you can take back to your country when you hopefully get to resettle. I'm not sure if that will, I might skip that and go back if we've got time. It's just showing why we're so passionate about education for young children, because so many of them, even if you say the word war, they sometimes just hide under the desk. You see children in the classrooms bearing scars from bullets or machetes, and many of them have lost family members. So to provide schooling gives them a chance to have some healing. It gives them something to do each day, puts them in a safe place, and gives them hope for the future. Because again, education is something that you can't take away. And so we're passionate about providing schools and training teachers in the refugee camps. Two years ago, in November 2016, this was a bare block in one of our refugee camps. Then through a grant and support from people here in Australia, by February we saw bricks and mortar, and by April a brand new school, allowing over 250 students to go to school. And amongst that, allowing a lot of girls the opportunity to go to school, which is an incredible gift. And I guess the thing that inspires and encourages us is when you think of, you know, the big war between the Protestants and the Catholics in Ireland, and now how that has changed because you have to educate one or two generations. And so through this education in the camps, we're also hoping and teaching people ways to resolve conflict for the future, so that when they do go back to their countries, they actually take with them ways to help solve the problems that have caused the conflict in the first place. So through this, you bring smiles. And it's people like you who do things to raise money to change lives. And for this, at ALWS, we are incredibly grateful and just say thank you to you, because you bring love and hope to life in so many ways. And even the young people, just be encouraged that they are also part of this responding. And I guess we often think of the words that Jesus says, that whenever you do any of these things for the lonely, the lost, the neglected, it's like you're doing it for him. And this is just the last thing for those who don't know. I've got a few things here. If you want to know how you can turn pig poo into power, it's biogas, but it's a little pamphlet there if you want to take that home. There's just a little bit of information about ALWS and how we work. There's a couple of things. These have been made by some women with disability in Nepal. They were taught how to sew. If you'd like to take one, just leave a donation on the table. These were made by some women in Cambodia, so again, they're for you. And for those of you who know, well, you might want to have a browse. This is a book written by my husband, Jonathan. Funny stories, but a connection sort of between faith and real life. And they're $20 each. I could only bring one because my case is so full of things I need for the school students. But I've got a list there. If you want to pay for it and write your name and address, I will post it to you when I get back next week. Just want to say a really big thank you for your time and for just hearing about the work that some of you have already been part of. And if you feel inspired, you can ask the people here, they'll guide you, or you can go to our website, alws.org.au. But thank you. Thanks, Marlene.
Thank you, Julie. The ladies here do...